Travis.
Yo.
Would you rather, in a world where you no longer could walk, right, and your only means of transportation were one of these two options, which one would you rather be? One, you have to ride in a red radio flyer wagon being pulled by a potbelly pig that doesn't like you, but generally does what you want, okay?
Okay.
Or ride on an electric skateboard that only ran when you sang the song that never ends, and how you feel about the song while you're singing it is how fast or slow that it's going. So if you're like really into the song at that moment, it goes really fast. If you're not really into it, it barely trudges along. And I'm talking like you can't even like hobble around in your no leg body.
Okay.
Like you're just a torso and arms. And for whatever reason, like, you don't have enough arm strength to just, like, hop around, like a little three-legged tripod thing. You only can use these two modes of transportation.
I choose the pig.
You choose the pig, but it doesn't like you, and it doesn't do what you say all the time.
Yeah, well.
You'd rather not sing?
Yeah, I figure...
The song that never ends.
I figure potbelly pigs...
On my friend.
There's some chicks that really, they're really into pigs, so I think that might be, you know, like a good pickup thing.
Hey, baby.
But.
Wanna get in my little red wagon and take a pig ride with me?
But, like, if you're just riding along on an electric scooter singing the most irritating song on the fucking planet, I don't think I'd enjoy that life. I'd rather...
You could go so fast and always go where you want to go.
Yeah, I don't... No. I'm never going to be into that song.
It is a song that never ends. So, like, right now, I'd be going, like, a million miles an hour because I'm so into the song right this second. It just goes on and on, my friend.
I don't think I'd be very safe on a skateboard.
Probably not. I'd probably be, like, a little rocket. I'd probably crash and, like... become a splatter on somebody's building.
Yeah, or
hey, but that's not what this podcast is about, though, bro.
What?
We're not...
Blood splatters?
We're not talking about blood splatters, or...
how much of you it takes to paint a building?
The song that never ends. We're primarily a Magic the Gathering podcast. Not 100% Magic the Gathering, but primarily a Magic the Gathering podcast. And, you know, today's title is about, do you like budget bricks? Dex, bro. Do you like budget Dex, bro?
I love them. I didn't even spend a dollar.
And that's our subtitle today. Didn't even spend a dollar. So, before we get into that topic, let's do what we always do. We kick things off in the appropriate manner. How did you do at the last week's Friday Night Magic and whatnots?
Well, so I finally got to play after about...
Nice.
After about, what, 3 weeks of not playing... And
work has let you do some stuff.
Yeah, work let me be free. And I went 3-0-1. And I did that with... I'm basically going to call it 5-color mono green because... I only splashed the other 4 colors for 2 or 3 spells each.
Yeah, you keep saying things like this and it doesn't make me feel any more like this is a mono color deck. You basically say this to me all the time. Like, oh, well, it's mono green. I'm like, okay, well, what if you cut your villainous wealth? No. Splashing for it. Ah, that's not what mono white means or mono green. Urgh. Reach to the screen and strangle you.
That's...
So, tell me, give me the story about this deck again real quick in a nutshell.
Okay, so essentially, you know, for early game, we have the Jotty Offshoot, Elvish Visionary.
Love it.
Which, I mean, that's just one of the best cantrips of all time.
Okay, if you say so.
Yep, I do. And
how many other cantrips are in this category?
Nope.
Maybe
just,
that's the question.
Just the Elvish Visionary is the only one in that particular category.
Okay. Are the best cantrips of all time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just that one card.
Okay.
And then
now we have a problem because you're just wrong now.
Then we have the Retreat to Kazandu.
I love it.
So that's basically our early game. And so, you know, that just helps with the early game blockers and life gain, you know, stuff like that. And then we also have Altar of the Brood.
One of my favorite cards ever since it was released. I'm a little bit off of this deck now.
Well,
but okay.
Card is amazing.
It's fine. Yeah, I mean, making all your things, like, also mill one card seems fine. Not good. Not great. Not necessarily worth a card slot, but
that's fine. That's why I take up four with it.
Definitely not worth four card slots, but okay, keep going.
Okay, so after that, all we really have is, you know, just different forms of fetching for mana. You know, just one of the cards that I have talked about highly, and I still love it to this day, Nissa's Renewal.
Right. That's a good one.
One of the games that I played, I had, you know, obviously I played Nissa's Renewal. I had two Altar of the Broods, a Jotty Offshoot, and a Retreat to Kazandu on the field. So I fetched for the three lands, caused them to mill six, and I gained 16 life for six mana.
Okay. Seems good.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good life swing total. And then, let's see, other than that, you know, I have Secure the Waste for jump blockers or if I need to be aggressive. And then also, you know, the Secure the Waste will mill anywhere between one and however much mana I have.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this deck in action, or at least pieces of this deck in action, and it's got a lot of raw potential, so I wouldn't put the nay on it, but other people are using things like one Ulamog or one, I don't know, what's the colorless planeswalker, Ugin?
Yeah.
An Ugin or something like that, some other big fancy finisher to kind of make things happen, and you're using Altar the Brood. Like, on one side, and this is going to be a little controversial, on one side, your win condition comes down on turn one. However, in the late game, when you're both, like, digging for that top deck victory, your win condition, if you top deck it, is not nearly as good as, say, like, that Ugin.
Right, but that's why I have a lot of X spells.
I guess. As always, I'm pro you tearing it up, having a good time, making people's life miserable, as long as it's not mine.
And the only deck that I didn't beat was the four-color Rally.
Right.
And that's the,
that's a very good deck.
Yeah, and we tied with that. And then, so the first game in that, he couldn't find that second white source. Because I milled it away. I milled all of his white sources except for one. And so I basically won that game due to him not being able to do anything. Second game, he just comboed off really quick like that deck has the potential to do. And then the third game, it did go to time. And had I been the one playing when time ran out, then I would have won the game. Because I just needed one more turn to empty his library.
Okay. So, but then he would have had an empty library, and then you would have had to pass the turn.
Right, and then he would have drawn.
Okay.
He would have drawn nothing.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, maybe you need a way to force a player to draw cards in that deck.
Is there anything like that in Standard?
I have no idea.
Because I can't really think of anything.
I can't either, but it doesn't mean there's not.
Right.
I can't think of it, so.
Well,
I'm glad you had fun. I'm glad you got a chance to play. I got to play some Magic this week, too.
Indeed.
And unlike usual, I didn't get to draft, which was a little bit of a letdown, but that means I got to play my standard deck that I've been fiddling with for a long time. And I have it right here, next to me, as a matter of fact. I'm opening the box. I don't have a sideboard, so I think maybe next week we'll talk about trying to put together the sideboard for this deck in particular. But it is a Mardu deck, and I built it all around two cards in particular. Monastery Mentor and Soulfire Grandmaster. Two of my favorite cards in this current standard metagame. And things like Draconic Roar, Wild Slash, probably the best card in standard of Crackling Doom right now. I just really, really love this deck. It just seems to be filled with one hit after another. Like the weakest card in this deck is possibly the Thunderbreak Regent, which I didn't say it correctly. I apologize for listeners out there. Thunder, thunder, Thunderbreak Regent. That's how you're supposed to say Thunderbreak Regent, for the record.
It's too long.
But I had a lot of fun with it. It did really well. I may have dropped a game. I don't think so. I'd have to go back and look at my sheet. Kind of mentally trying to go through it. I don't remember game 3. There may have been one game 3, but I really doubt it. For the most part, it just kind of did its thing. It tore things up. So next week, we'll take a closer look at that. So I'll have a full deck list for you next week, and then we'll dig into looking at the sideboard. But it just makes me really appreciate certain cards in this deck, specifically my troll card of the week, Draana, Liberator of Malachar. She's also in this deck as a 3-of. And, like, between her and Monastery Mentor or Soulfire Grandmaster, I just had so many lightning rods that it was so easy to play out these little threats and get all of the removal out of their hand and then have one of these little guys and still have mana to keep up, like, a good removal spell of my own or a Planeswalker or something like that, some sort of sweet effect, but I could follow up with another one of these cheap threats just because they're so good and they're so cheap. It just did so much work. I was really, really impressed all day long. I ran a singleton black-red command, and I kind of Culligan's command. I kind of want to make it 2. A big yawn there. I kind of want to make it 2 because these little guys are just so good that it's easy enough to Culligan's command and replay them in the same turn, or even Culligan's command at a draw step or something, and then replay in the next turn and still keep whatever card up that you draw going on. So I was really impressed, especially with Draana. It seemed like I could run out a lightning rod, another lightning rod, a third lightning rod, and then I would stick the Draana, and my opponents would just, like, basically put their heads right in their lap or whatever. They basically just sad puppies. So you had a comment about Draana you wanted to share?
She's just, like, I played against her this week as well, and they were actually playing a black-red deck, and she did just so much damage. And it wasn't even, you know, her doing the most damage. It was just overall the damage that she she has the potential to produce.
Did you ever play Dungeons & Dragons?
Yes.
Travis? Okay. Well, there is a class that's woefully underappreciated there. It's called the Bard class, right? And what people don't realize, because the Bard is often considered...
a joke?
Yeah, kind of. Is that if you layer these buffs on, you actually out-DPS the entire party.
Right.
Right? Like, the Bard songs, I don't know exactly what it is in D&D anymore, if it's like 1 or 2 or 4, if it grows. Because I played Dungeons & Dragons online, and it does grow there. So, if every attack you do an extra, let's call it 2 points of damage, by, you know, 3 or 4 people in the party, that's a lot of extra damage. If they do something like cast extra strength spell on you, or haste, and gives you a whole extra attack, that's a lot of extra damage. And 1-1 counter on each of your creatures is a similar effect. It's extremely misleading. And the fact that it's not tied to a permanent, like, say, a Jace emblem or an enchantment or something like that, the fact that it's physically a 1-1 counter on the creature is just huge.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think a lot of people undervalue her. Man, I hurt my back. I don't know if I mentioned this already yet, but I did something to my back yesterday. So when I get overly excited about something, I take a bigger breath. It's just like this super sharp pain, and I completely just lock up for a second. So I apologize. That's how excited I am about Dronica, that I literally hurt my back trying to talk about how great she's been for me.
Like old people problem.
I do sound like an old people, don't I? Oh, so old. Tell me about your troll card of the week. Mirror Mockery?
Yes,
right? Is that what it is?
Mirror Mockery. I chose this as my troll card of the week because, well, when I was playing, I put 2 in the sideboard. And I put 2 in the sideboard mainly against, you know, just aggressive decks. And turns out that this card is super efficient against Siege Rhino. The reason being is because every time they attack, it's a 3-point life swing.
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, and then, see that?
It's a good card.
Yeah, like, that's one of the things that I had it on. Then I had it on, I can't remember everything.
I mean, often Mirror Mockery is essentially considered a blue pacifism effect, right? Like,
it can be, depending on, you know, what their creature is.
Kind of makes them not want to attack or
right.
whatever. But I've actually used it quite a bit to...
aggressively?
Yeah, aggressively. So I think it gives you a nice range of options that... like, this would be a really solid commander card, I think, in a... like a commander deck that's got a little bit of a build around it, but coming to play effects.
Okay.
But you don't have access to something like Kiki Jiki or Splinter Twin.
Right.
If you don't have access to those colors, that's something that I think could be quite good. So, yeah, I don't hate this card. I use it quite a bit in draft. I'll often in... Dragon's Fate, I would first pick this relatively often. So that, to me, says a bunch. And I would also use it in the blue-black Sacrifice deck. So, like I said, I think it's a good card.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, especially, you know, when I was playing against it was an Abzan deck, obviously, with the Siege Rhino, and, you know, they played the this person played Dromoka's Command. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to sacrifice Mirror Mockery. I guess I'll just get rid of, you know, Retreat to Kazandu. I'll suffer, you know, 2 damage to make you not attack.
Okay.
And I thoroughly enjoy it because there's just so many good creatures right now that if it attacks, then it's just going to get chump blocked. Or even, you know, killed, and with so many cards having higher toughness than power, then it's really not that much of a big deal. especially if it grants you, like, you know, life, or it hurts them in any way.
Well, I agree. Like, there's a lot of really solid potential to be had with something like a Mirror Mockery. This is a troll card like we haven't really done in a long time, where this is a card that has potentially unlimited upside, basically, depending on how you tweak it and take advantage of it.
Right.
Like, if you have just some sort of unblockable creature, which I don't know if there's, like, a really cheap unblockable creature right now.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, there is, yep. Isn't there? There's the 1/1 for 1 that's unblockable.
Yep, the Morph guy.
Yeah, so the Morph guy. So I don't know if something, and again, this is like a stupid combo that only really works in Travis land, but like you could Mirror Mockery that guy with your with your different come into play effects that happen, like I would do Impact Tremors. You would probably do something like what were we just talking about that I told you was dumb?
You know what I would actually want to do that with? And
what?
Oh, hell. The name...
I'm just talking...
The name just eluded me. It's a goblin from Cons that when it comes into play or is morphed, it brings in three dudes.
Yeah, see, those are the kind of things that I'm talking about. Those kind of upside value things. The disadvantage of the goblin ponyback rider?
Yeah, ponyback rider.
That sounds right. The disadvantage of things like that is it's easy to block and kill in combat.
Yeah.
Where something unblockable or indestructible or perhaps even a legend that comes into play and does something like... Oh, I don't know what would be a good example, actually. Anything that really comes into play, there's a lot of raw potential in there. I was going to say one of the flip planeswalkers, like Nissa, but that probably wouldn't be best.
Gideon.
Gideon, maybe? Like, Gideon gives indestructible, but having two of them doesn't really do anything for you. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a good card that people could find room for and really, really tweak. I think when Khan rotates out and with Innistrad, right? Khan leaves with Innistrad.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see some more interesting use of the Mirror Mockeries and stuff like that. A lot of these cards that are kind of on the fringe are going to be a thing. And I pulled up the picture just a minute ago, and I'm not even... very far down, and it's there's a picture of Mirror Mockery that says blue EDH staple. So I guess I'm not that far away if somebody else has already made an animation for that, but I'm definitely pro that card. So I'm going to mix things around here a little bit on the show notes. You got anything exciting coming up, Travis? Like, any events or anything like that?
I think this week on FNM it is Modern. So,
okay.
I think I'm going to be running my favorite Magic card in all of Magic history, Norrin the Wary.
Right. We've talked about that before.
I'm going to run that deck with Tomb of the Spirit Dragon. And then Eldar Sovereign.
You got so many words that I don't even think I know. So
Tomb of the
we'll have to dig into that next week. Also, I know what Tomb of the Spirit Dragon does.
Felidar Sovereign is if you have 40 or more life at the beginning of your upkeep.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so
I do know what that card is.
Just, you know, ramp the hell out of life and not do anything. It'll be a fun game.
It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. So this week, yeah, you see how much exciting I have. This week for me, we're actually trying something new at the shop, which is kind of cool. We actually have an abundance of the new Commander decks still in stock. So what we're going to try doing is have a stock 2015 Commander tournament, pods, whatever you want to call it. We're going to run essentially $5 pods all day long for these stock Commander decks, and I think it'll be a lot of fun, actually. So, not really preparation, but sort of preparation. My family has already purchased their set, and we've kind of been playing them more or less all week long, and there are some surprisingly interesting cards in that, in this. I really, really like the experience point mechanic. I don't know if you've looked at this at all, or if you're even remotely interested. Sorry, again with the back.
I have looked at them, and I just not really interested in
this.
The new commanders.
This is the problem, okay? And this, I think, was probably the trolliest thing that's happened to me in a very, very long time. My son has fallen in love with the red-blue one, right? And I don't know how much you're familiar with that particular commander, but essentially, when you play a spell that has a converted mana cost greater than the number of experience points counter he has, you add another experience points counter. And what he does is, while he's in play, the experience points counter reduce the spells of instants and sorceries that you play. So if you have, let's say, 3 experience points counters and you play Fact or Fiction, it costs you 1 blue.
Okay.
Right? So that's a pretty exciting magic card by itself.
And then that itself bumps the experience counter by 1.
Yes, it would. Because its converted mana cost would be 4, and then you're paying 3, or paying 1 for it. So yeah, it would knock it up indeed. So what my son did, and actually I feel very, very impressed with his, what he's doing, is there's a clone effect in there, or two perhaps, and there's a lot of unique mind control effects in that deck. So what he was doing is stealing the other people's commanders, or cloning them or whatever, that also use the same mechanic, right, or the experience points mechanic, to do different things. Like the one that I was playing was the green-blue one. And what it says is every time you play a creature with power 2 or less, you put an experience points counter on. And once at the beginning of your attack step, I think, you get to put +1/+1 counters equal to the number of experience points counter you have on one of your creatures.
Okay.
All right, and another creature. So what he did very early on was cloned my commander. And then he almost immediately played a Talrin.
Okay.
Okay. So then he played like a 1 mana cost spell, which put a 1 counter on his experience points counter, made a 2/2, which put another counter on it. Right? And then basically played a 3 converted mana cost spell, but paid 1 mana for it, which made another 2/2, which put another counter on it, which put another, you know what I'm saying? He just racked up like all of these counters, like essentially in 1 or 2 turns, and then made like I think it was an 8/8 flyer, like almost like on turn 4 or 5,
right,
or something. And it was just like, you know, and I spent a lot of my resources dealing with it. But meanwhile, he's casting things like something of the Fire Mind, that like you go tutor up a 1, a 2, and a 3 converted mana cost instant.
Yep.
And he's casting that and reloading his hands with 1, 2, and 3 converted mana cost things that are things like Domination, which is permanently steal your guy. for like a blue, and one, and X, where X equals its converted mana cost. Or things like the instant speed fireball that's like red, red, and X. And I was like, jeez, he just literally took over the game. So I was super impressed. I'm very impressed with these commander decks. I haven't wanted to build another commander deck since I kind of found the red Planeswalker commander deck. But I'm very tempted to take something like this red-blue deck and give it the little Samus touch. So like maybe buy a new one and tweak it out a little bit. Because I think there's a lot of raw potential in these particular commanders.
Yeah.
So seeing what people who actually play Commander on a regular basis, how they deal with these Commander decks, I think is going to be very interesting.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to this weekend, even though I'm not really a Commander player. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of things that are a lot of fun,
I did play some Commander before I went to the FNM as well, and almost immediately, people remembered how much they hate Beborgamos.
Sure, because it's terrible.
Well, it's terribly awesome. So my commander, you know, he's the Lightning Bolt Beborgamos, Beborgamos Enraged, and I was playing against someone who had that red-white, the new red-white commander. Someone who was playing a Brago-type deck. One that's basically like, you can't hurt me. And then the whole time I'm just going to be gaining life. And then I was playing against Slivers as well. So it was a very wide range of things going on. And within two turns, it was probably turn six, I had 12 men on the field because, well, Beborgamos ramps like crazy. And then I managed to kill off all three players in two turns.
After getting Beborgamos
down?
Yeah,
because let's see, the board state was like, I had Exploration, Horn of Greed, and Xenagos, the god of revelers.
Sure.
So that was my board state. So every time I played a land, I drew a card, and I could play two lands a turn. So, you know, and the deck has 54 lands in it, which is probably, I want to say, 15 to 20 lands more than most people have in their commanders.
Most people run around 20,
it's like
20%.
Yeah.
Or 40%, sorry. So usually around 40 lands, give or take, sometimes one or two more, one or two less, but 40% is a good number.
And I'm running roughly 52%, something like
right.
that. I played Beborgamos, gave him haste with Xenagos, and made him a 14-13, and I attacked the dude who was playing Brago, or whatever he was, I think it was Brago, and so got him 13, you know, commander damage right off the bat, got three extra cards in my hand, and then as soon as the Sliver player played his the Indestructible Sliver, the newest one, I immediately wiped his entire field by lightning bolting every single creature he had. So he was just left with a 5/5 Indestructible. And then the next turn, I attacked the dude who was, I attacked the same person again, got three extra cards. I played one land, and I drew a Keen Sense. So, do you know what Keen Sense is?
That's where, if they do damage, you draw a card, right?
So, he had 26 commander damage, so he was out of the game. So, I immediately turned my attention to the Sliver player, because, well, slivers. And I just started lightning bolting, and I just started discarding the lands, hitting him for 3. And with a deck that has roughly 52% land, the odds of me drawing more land is pretty high. So I kept doing that, got him out of the game, and then I had, from earlier on in the game, I had Renaissance. Crap, I can't remember the exact name of it.
You know, I think what you need to do is you need to go ahead and put this thing together on MTG Goldfish so people can see the full deck list of Your Majesty, and maybe they will also, like, or you could do it on Tapped.net or whatever your choice is. But let them get a chance to look at it and get some feedback on, because I think you're probably onto something good, and if we have some Commander players listening, and I don't know that we do, and I don't know that we don't, I think it'll be good to have a few more eyes at it and maybe do a little bit more fine-tuning on it. But it sounds like you generally get everything out of it that you want for a good Commander deck, right? Like, you get reasonable amount of wins, you have a lot of fun while playing it, and it comes kind of from left field and people don't expect it, which is what is most important to us as trolls. We want to make sure that you get the shock end all.
Well, my win rate with this deck is about, I want to say, 80%. And the only time that I lose with it is when people just either team up against me, which is completely understandable and I don't really care because, well, it's a huge threat, or they have Obsolescence on the field.
Sure. So, not that I don't want to spend another 10 minutes talking about your Commander deck, which we totally can on another show, let's move on to Moto Adventures here for just a second, because I want to talk about that before we get into our email and our main topic for this show. I was playing Magic Online, like I do every Tuesday at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. And you woke up and jumped in to join the stream. And we kind of played to get together a little bit and had a good time. And you decided to, while we were doing that, put together this cute little artifact-based deck. And is the working name less than a dollar?
I mean, it might as well
right now?
Be.
Now, as I understand it, because we kind of talked about it while you were doing it, you did purchase from some bots that you already had some credit kind of stacked up for.
Right.
But usually that's not like positive credit. That's usually like leftover credit. So, like, you probably had, like, I don't know what, like half a ticket here, half a ticket there, whatever it is.
Yeah, something like that.
But essentially you spent less than one ticket, one new ticket on getting this thing together. So, throw this together for a nutshell for me. What's the idea? What's the key pieces? Et cetera.
Well, the idea is just, you know, colorless. And
right, so it's a brown deck.
Yeah. You know, for any new players, brown is what artifacts used to be colored. The idea is just colorless and get a bonded conscript out there pretty early if it doesn't get shut down. You know, you can
attack on turn 7 with it.
Turn 7. That was awful, by the way. Then, you know, Tomb of the Spirit Dragon, because I'm producing so many colorless things. Like, I have Spawning Bed and Boundary of the Consoles. And, you know, for early game defense, I have Guardians of Miletus. Whatever it's called, the 0/6 defender for 3. The Guardian Automaton. The 3/3 that when it dies, you gain 3 life. Rune Servitor, you know, when it dies, I guess each player draws a card. I do have 2 Meteorites in the deck, because I find that card funny. 5 mana, shock something, and then get any color of mana. Pilgrim's Eye to, you know, fix the land, because the majority of the land base is colorless. And then, you know, I do have cards like Thopter Spy Network in here, which produced me all of these extra colorless creatures, in addition to letting me draw cards. And I didn't know exactly how much money I was going to spend on it, so I bought, 20 tickets from Moto. I ended up using one of them, so I have 19 tickets right now, just sitting in Moto.
Yeah, my thought process with a deck like this is we start getting into, if we're going to focus on colorless, right? And color really isn't a problem because we're using things like Pilgrim's Eye and stuff like that to kind of tutor things up or dig or whatever. We start running into the situation where I'm like, let's do Herald of Kozilek, let's do Ruination Guide, let's if we're going to be aggressive, let's be aggressive. And you did have some of that stuff, but I think instead you were like, I just want to play these sweet artifacts. And it's something that has kind of fallen out of favor since
since
Soul
Scissors,
Artifact rotated
since
the out.
Scissors died.
So it's definitely intriguing. I would like to see what happens. Again, I think the Enchant Artifact is super strong. It's actually one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how or to what degree we want to work on in Modern. Because I have a lot of what people would consider the affinity deck. I don't have a lot of the stuff from Mirrodin, or from Scars of Mirrodin, which means that a lot of the power pieces are missing. But I think I can improvise in a lot of situations or get certain things because they're cheap, they're commons, uncommons, whatever. It's just the power stuff that I don't have access to, the Mox. I forget what the Mox is called.
No,
Diamond?
Mox.
No, that's not right.
Chromox.
It doesn't matter. Chromox. Whatever the Mox is, I don't have those. And there's a few other little power things out of there that I don't have access to. But things like Insole Artifact or potentially something like Herald of Kozilek, depending on what else you decide to do with it, you could probably get this nice emulsion of what's going on, including something like, again, that Molten Nursery that we talked about last week. So I think there's a lot of range right now and stuff like that. And I think Colorless in particular has really done a very good job of becoming the quote-unquote sixth color, right? Colorless now does have additional meanings. And I think it's pretty sweet. So tell me how you did playing against people with this less than a dollar deck last week.
I played against you, and then I had to get ready for work. So
what was your win ratio?
My win ratio yesterday was 0-1. So I can work up from there, I guess.
Didn't you win one of the matches?
Yeah, we did
go
to game
three. Yeah, we went to game three. I don't remember. Did I get to a situation where you countered my only one or two threats, and I just never could draw another threat?
That's basically what it was, because you had two of the blue con or the blue siege. Yeah, and you're just drawing three cards a turn, and you just.
I just never found anything but lands.
Yeah, the Moto Shuffler decided, hey, you really like drawing lands. That's basically what happened.
Yeah, it was fun. But, it happens. Variance is a thing. I think I said that there. That'll definitely be one of our t-shirts.
Variance.
Two trolls and a brew. Variance is a thing. Variance is a thing. I thought it was good. It looked good and impressed me. And if it wasn't for the fact that I basically was always able, you play your turn 1-2-1, and then your turn 2 whatever, and I would,
singing
on
bell
my
strike.
Turn 2, singing bell strike, and then your guy would basically be like, I can't do anything. It was pretty good.
Remember that time I was a threat?
Yeah. Remember when I attacked for two on turn two? Oh, yeah. It never happened. So, it was a lot of fun. I think with some tuning, we can make that work. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Speaking of Modern, and playing Modo yesterday, we got an email by an individual, Adam, who was checking out the stream and heard about the podcast and what we kind of do and decided to send us a deck list via an email. And I will put the link up, but he's calling it Restored Balance. I'm calling it 24 Ticket Modern.
44?
And basically this 44 Ticket 44. Modern, what'd I say? 24? I guess I'm already subtracting the $20 for Jace that I'm not going to spend. Jace Architect of Thought. Because I just don't think it's needed in this deck. Anyway, he says it goes up and down. It varies a little bit depending on what day of the week it is and stuff like that. But this deck runs... I'm going to have to go back over here to make to kind of work. Basically, it is a Restore Balance deck at its core. So it's running Ardent Pleas and Violent Outburst to make Restore Balance happen. It's using things like Detention Sphere, Beast Within, and Dismembers as your primary removal spells. It's running a slew of the Border Posts.
17 of them.
Which lets you... Yeah, it's all the Border Posts. So basically, you're spending a mana, returning a basic to your hand to get an artifact land, essentially, is what it works out to, except it's not really a land. So things like Restore Balance shut your opponents down. Then it's running Greater Gargadons, again, to kind of really work the Restore Balance angle. We're running Simeon Spirit Guides to kind of help power some things out. And then he's got Jorah of the Gertru? I don't know how you say G-H-I-T-U. Whatever. And this chick is a little bit strange. 2 mana, exile a non-land card from your hand. Put 4 time counters on the exile card, and if it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. So you can suspend these border posts for 2 mana. You can suspend...
Greater Gargadon.
Greater Gargadon already has suspend, so if you want to spend 2 mana at instant speed to suspend a Greater Gargadon, sacrifice 4 permanents, you can do that. You could suspend March of the Machines, which I think is the primary win condition. It runs a single March of the Machines to wake up all these border posts to attack for lethal. Then, like I said, it runs 2 Jace Architect of Thoughts, which is a Jace I really like, but again, I don't want to spend $10 each on them for Modo copies. And then 1 Kiora, the Crashing Wave, which is a card I like quite a bit. But, I'm not sure how vital it is. I think the important thing with it is it lets you play an additional land each turn. I think that's the key. But at the same time, you're basically spending 3 mana. Or no, you're spending a mana, returning a basic land to play your artifact land. So you're kind of setting it up in such a way where you're getting ahead, even though you're killing your planeswalker. Which, if you're already at 4 mana, shouldn't you have other ways to get ahead? I don't know. But I am considering dropping the tickets on it. The key pieces of it are not very expensive. If we cut like the Jaces out, and we cut like the Dismembers, I don't think it's necessary. All of a sudden the deck falls to it starts free falling very quickly. Greater Gargadons, 4 of them are up right now to 3.5 tickets. Core Firewalkers are currently at 3 tickets for 3 of them. They kind of go up and down, depending on what's going on.
How well Red is doing.
So, yeah. Which, it's a good card to just main deck because Red is so popular on Magic Online. Like, to me, this is an excellent choice for the online metagame specifically. But yeah, no. I thought this was a sweet one. And I do appreciate people sending decks, especially why I'm streaming. It gives me something to look at and talk about why, between calculating plays and stuff like that. So if you want to be like Adam, and Adam's a cool guy, you can send us an email at twotrollsbrew@gmail.com, and that will let us look at sweet things and potentially invest in your deck. Like I said, I think the shell is here. I don't know if you really need 17 artifacts, although he is running 13 basic lands, so maybe you do want it? I don't know. It's pretty questionable.
And
I definitely think the core idea is there. I like the restore balance.
I was playing against someone who was running a border post deck. I don't know if it was this exact list, but I do know it had the border post and the Gargadon. Everything else is just kind of like, just not.
Well, most border post decks do tend to run the Gargadon. They usually run Restore Balance, the Ardent Plea, and the Violent Outburst. Like those, that's the core, right? So then adding in things like the Spirit Guide, that's a little bit of a personal tweak. Adding in things like the Kiora is a little bit of a tweak. The March of the Machines, I think, is very good. I like the March of the Machines in this list. I think I would probably go up another one personally, because, again, I think that's your primary win condition. But maybe he thinks his primary win condition is just making them scoop to restore balance. Well,
and I don't know. The thing is, like, when I played against the deck, the one thing it really loses to is Stony Silence. Because they only have 13 lands in the deck, and they're just kind of like, just struggling.
Oh, I think that's part of the reason why you have the main deck Beast Within, but it does make it very difficult to,
right,
to play there. I'm not going to lie. Like I said, I do think that it needs a little bit additional tweaking. I don't think this list is exactly right, but I can see making something like this happen. Whether it runs something like a bounce spell, like the one blue bounce effect, just so you can get back under your, to cast a couple of spells that turn, or set them up in a situation where they can do something. It's, I don't know. I want to fiddle with it. I think for the minimal investment of the outposts, the restore balances, potentially the greater Gargadon, like I said, you're talking 7, 10, you're talking less than 12 tickets, or less than $12 to get the core of the deck together. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how you want to kind of tweak things around. And I definitely think that it is a solid possibility in here. I think we could do some tweaking and make it work, especially Marching Machines being 30 cents. I think we can tweak some stuff around and make it quite good. But yeah, Adam, thanks for getting us on the track. I don't think we're going to play this exact copy of the deck, but I definitely think over the next couple of weeks, Travis and I will take a look at it and see what we can put together that uses this core idea of the restore balance. I think it is affordable. I think we can make this into like a $20 or $30 deck and have some good luck with it. I want to get into our main topic now that we're almost an hour into the show, specifically other games. We primarily focus on Magic, but we do play other games. For quite a while now, I've said I'd spend a lot of time playing Hearthstone versus Magic. And starting last week, you and I teamed up finally to play some League of Legends, and I had some fun. And then last night, I jumped on with some friends to play Heroes of the Storm, which is very similar, but has some tweaks here or there over League, I think, in my opinion. I would call them advantages over League. I don't know if you would. But yeah, I just kind of want to talk about that just a little bit and how, like, maybe Magic in particular helps you play some of these other games. So like Hearthstone, I really feel I'm not quite intuitive enough with the sequencing yet, like I am with Magic.
Right.
You've seen me play Hearthstone. And anyone who watches the streams have seen me play Hearthstone. You know that I will make a series of plays and then I'll go, oh, that was sequenced wrong or whatever. And I'll make a comment about it. At the same time, I feel like I'm getting a lot of advantage in my Magic by playing a game like Hearthstone, where the gameplay is just so much faster, right? Like, I could play three games of Hearthstone in, you know, half an hour, which, again, that's what you're supposed to do for Magic, except that's both players, right? So instead of three matches in 50 minutes, you know, I could probably get five matches in. And it's just the difference in time that it takes for me to take my turns. Again, I'm still not playing optimally yet because I'm missing the sequencing. But the timing is way different. And then also Hearthstone is giving me the advantage of seeing things I haven't seen before and reacting. So, like, one of the reasons I don't play a lot of Modern is because there's a huge section of the Modern card pool out there that I don't know. So I feel at an extreme disadvantage for those kind of situations. But Hearthstone, I don't know a lot of the cards. Like, I'm at totally disadvantaged. I only know a very small percentage of the cards. So it's... I have to learn every card. I have to read every card and figure out the interactions and how it's affecting me. And I think that skill, I think, will carry over to Magic quite well. Do you have any thoughts about them individually, Travis?
Well, for, you know, Modo versus Hearthstone, I do like that Hearthstone has a mobile version.
Oh, yeah. So that's great.
I do think that's an advantage, simply because you can just take your phone with you and just start playing if you're ever, like, bored on...
You can do, like, what...
waiting for a bus or something.
So you could do, like, what I was doing and playing Hearthstone between the commander turns around your...
Yeah, pretty much.
...cable?
But with... I mean, with Magic, you know, it's just... It's been around for so long that there's so many different things that you can do. And that's why I like brewing, is because there's just so
right.
much you can do. Now, I'm not saying you can't do a lot with Hearthstone, but primarily it's just either, you know, who gets the enemy to zero first, or who has, you know, the deck out first, right?
I mean, there's a lot of that. It's a game built to be played online for online players. So it has a lot of advantages there versus the history of Magic like you're talking about. And it's still very... I mean, it's been around less than
something
a year,
like
right? So, like, if you look at the first year of Magic, like, its primary win conditions was take your opponent to zero. And it's still one of the most common way of winning a game of Magic
right,
is to take your opponent
also,
to zero.
You know, Hearthstone was a... You know, how they're basing it is based off of the card game, the World of Warcraft card game. So that
right.
card game was around.
I mean,
that card game was around
there.
For a number of years, and
it like that to Hearthstone, from what I understand, is like saying a Model T. Compared to, you know, like a slightly newer, truck, you know, there's a lot of similarities in the fact that it's got four wheels and a motor, but there's a big difference in, like, one has cruise control, one has, way more efficient gas mileage, stuff like that. So, I mean, they're definitely related. They're definitely cousins. I don't know how much they are. Where Magic, on the other hand, is definitely right. The same game. It's evolved and it's grown, but it is not. It's not like the difference between cousins or siblings or something like that. That are two separate entities, even though they are related. Magic is just constantly evolving, constantly growing, and I think Hearthstone will too.
It's a baby.
It's got this different shell. Yeah, it's a baby, and it's got this different shell, right? Like, only existing in a digital medium means that you can do a lot of really cool things. But then it also means it can only do those cool things that you can do through a digital medium. Right? Where Magic has been primarily a physical game, and then having this kind of clunky digital interface to truly represent, and I'm air-quoting that, truly represent your physical game is a different story, right? It means that there's a lot more difficulty going on. And again, we're talking specifically about Magic Online. And don't get me wrong, Magic Online is better than no Magic Online. There's definitely flaws in the program, but to me it's fine. I'm getting used to the UI. I know there's a lot of people out there who still don't like the new UI. But it is basically the thing that I play the most. Like, I played a lot, like, 7 years ago. So there's a lot of things there that are still a little bit in my memory, but not foremost. So for the most part, I'm learning based off of this client. And to me, it's not a big deal. Same thing with Hearthstone, but Hearthstone's, like, a mouse-only kind of client. You don't even have to, you can't even hit F2 or F6 or anything like that. And as we all know, we're F6 for lifers here. So let's just kind of talk a little bit about League versus Heroes of the Storm. And you don't know anything about Heroes of the Storm, and I don't know very much about either. So if you're one of the guys who have really looked at the League versus Heroes of the Storm, or you're really one over the other, send us an email. Again, that's twotrollsbrew@gmail.com. We'd love to get that kind of feedback. But as a guy, kind of got one foot in each world, and then, like, I'm really heavily relying on a quote-unquote expert.
Oh,
I'm going to call you
Travis.
You're
in a world of trouble then.
an expert in League. Although Terry from the arena is apparently a gold-level player. I don't even know what that means in League.
He's
the little kid.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't want to give his full name so people didn't want to jump on there and Google him or whatever. But yeah, so now you guys know. But apparently he's extremely skilled at League. So I might have a real expert teaching
Josh
me some things
platinum.
Soon. And Josh is very, very good too. But getting Josh to do anything is like an uphill
just
battle.
Just ask him to play League and teach you. He'll do it.
That's true. I'll send him a text message. Say, hey, I'm starting to get into this. And then, of course, Heroes of the Storm. I have another friend, Dustin, who does Dungeons and A-Holes with me. He's been playing for quite a long time. And we're kind of getting into it. And basically, they're very, very similar games. They're the same kind of plan. The main difference between League versus Heroes of the Storm, in my mind, is everybody levels together. So everyone contributes to the XP equally. So if you have one person that's essentially carrying the team, normally that in League, that would mean that one person's getting all the XP, really. Where in Heroes of the Storm, it's a lot more team-based in that regard, right? Again, I don't know if that's advantage or disadvantage, but that's one of the things that I've kind of noticed. Heroes of the Storm, there's no buying of gear as a, I think in League you're calling it a build process. So that you don't have that. But in Heroes of the Storm, you have what they call traits, which you have something very similar in League with the leveling up system, but it's a little bit more generic-y, I want to say. I don't know. It's difficult to say. But it's a similar concept there. I think the big one is the not having the, like I said, not having the gold to buy gear to level up process. In League, that gives you essentially two different trees for optimizing your character, where in Heroes of the Storm, you really only have to deal with one, which for a newer player, it's nice, right? Like, you're still getting used to the idea, you're still getting used to the style. I kind of like that versus having both, but I think once I get used to the MOBA style, League, I think will probably, because it has that extra depth to it, I think we'll probably win out a little bit. The other big thing that I think is really nice about Heroes of the Storm over League would be there's characters that I actually identify with. Being a longtime StarCraft player, there's a lot of these characters that I know and I like and I've had a lot of experience with where I don't know any of these League guys. Do any of these League guys come from anywhere? Or are they just all made up characters?
They're just all made up for League.
Yeah, so there's zero attachment as a new player coming in to these kind of, to the League characters. Where I jumped into Heroes of the Storm, I started playing a StarCraft character, and as we were talking, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter what all these other guys do. I'm literally never going to play anything that's not a StarCraft character. I'm just not going to, because I'm just going to play the StarCraft guys, because that's who I want to play. Where in League, I don't know, like, I have no reason to get into any of the League characters other than you're saying, yeah, this guy would be good for you. This would kind of match your play style. And I'm like, all right, well, if you say so. So, I don't know. There's definitely a lot of advantages and disadvantages to both. The reason I bring it up essentially right this very minute is there is a program going on for Heroes of the Storm, which I will put a link to, I guess, on samusgrobo.com, and I'll stick it in the show notes also, where they're having a Recruit a Friend campaign. So if you... And I'm going to open this in a new tab, because I've already opened this once, I think. I want to see if I can get this to show up again for me. So essentially, if you go through this link, which I will, again, I'll put out there, you're going to get what they call a 5-day sim pack, which gives you bonus XP and bonus gold. Oh, that's a difference. The gold that you earn in the game, it, use that to buy the characters and unlock them. Is that how that works
somewhat
in League? Somewhat. Because I know that you use your gold to buy
right,
stuff in the
game. But after
game.
The game is over, you know, you earn experience points. Or,
and those experience
yeah.
points cash into
yeah, well, they're called
characters.
IP points.
Okay.
And then those, you can cash them in for characters or other different things that you can get from the store. Or if mm-hmm. you're just really bad at the game, you can use Riot points and just buy different characters. And that's also how you get the different skins for them and everything like that, too.
Sure. And Heroes have those same things, except they just charge dollars. They don't have to go through a third thing. So you can spend like a couple of bucks to get a character or a couple of bucks to get a skin and stuff like that. But anyway, so if you were to follow this invitation, which is what I did, I'm helping a friend of mine, Blazing Pie, also known as Dustin. We get like this 5-day XP bonus. You get a free hero, which is like 4,000 gold or like $3. And then you get, if once you make level 10, which I made level 3 playing one game last night, so I imagine level 10 is probably going to take me another 5 or 6 games, assuming that it's on a increasing scale of levels. When you hit level 10, you get a special character, which is the equivalent of 10,000 gold or around $6. It doesn't really matter for me because it's a character that I'll probably never play, but because it's a Warcraft character, but apparently she's quite good. So there's a possibility I'll get over my,
disdain.
I don't know, what do you want to call it? Distaste? Disdain for, non-StarCraft characters or not. The other big thing that's real different, and at first it really irritated me, but then I kind of started to warm up to it a little bit, is there are mounts in Heroes of the Storm. So, you know, like when you were to go back to the store for whatever reason, like in to heal or to buy something or whatever, and then you have to run back to the fight, in this game, you can actually mount your mount and then ride there much quicker. Like you get like a, say, let's say a 50% move bonus. I don't know what the actual move bonus is, but it gets you into the fight quicker again, which, again, I thought was irritating because I had to hit another button before I could get moving, but you just got to the fight so much quicker, it made it worth the time kind of thing. So, anyway, I'm going to put the link on samuscribble.com and part of the show notes, so if you're listening via, like, MTG Cast or whatever, you can visit there, too. It'll be part of the show notes. And if you don't have an account with, if you haven't started playing it, please give it a shot. Play for a little bit. If you make it to level 10, awesome. So much the better for my friend. I forget exactly what he gets out of it. I think if he gets so many people that get to level 10, then he gets a fancy mount. And I don't think the mounts do anything. I think they're all the same. They just have different skins. So he gets a rare-looking skinned mount. I don't know. All I know is the one that I kept getting stuck with yesterday was, like, this giant lizard thing, and I'm like, this feels dumb. Can I please have a different mount?
Can I have, like, a horse or something?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, can I get a horsey?
Or can I get a... I think that's... if you look at... Well, whatever. When you see the link, there's an actual image of a... what looks like a motorcycle. I think it's called a Valkyrie from StarCraft. It's like a little motorcycle that shoots little bombs and stuff. It's a pretty cool mount in StarCraft. I think your mount is one of those if you get some people leveled in there. So he'll probably have a mount that I'll be a little jealous of, to be honest. But whatever, it's fine. Let's see, what's left on the show notes? Oh, we're gonna play the new flavor text game. So we picked Mere Mockery to be this week's flavor text to get replaced. So the current flavor text is
who you are constantly runs toward who you will be. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Travis. That was much better. I'm trying to scramble to put the words together while moving around. So you have Person A, which I would say is a lady. Would you agree that that's a lady? I mean, it could be a feminine male.
Well, based off of, you know, since it's blue from Tarkir, if it's Tamir, that's a lady. Yeah.
If it's Tamir?
Which, I mean, Tamir is more of the battle type.
Do they not have any males in...
No, like Tamir males there? Were all just like...
I understand.
They were more, you know, like, brutish males. You know, the artwork for them. This looks like a very feminine, you know, artwork. So that's why I was thinking, if it's Tamir, it's a lady.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm smelling what you're cooking. And then, of course, the artwork would be the mirrored version of that person fighting her. In my opinion, it looks like they're coming in
for
a
kiss. Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh, so, Mirror just wants to make out.
So, together we decided to call it Kiss Me, We Are B-E-A-Utiful. That was one of the ones. Do you have another one, just kind of looking at now?
Just looking at it, it just kind of makes me think of, you know, the person just wants to make out with itself.
Like Oedipal complex. What's that? Oedipus complex? Right? Isn't that where you want to make out with yourself?
Bone your mom.
Bang your mom? What's the one that you want to just look at yourself? Narcissist? Not a narcissist. Get over here, sexy. Something along those lines. I don't know. There could be a lot of things, but I still like our first one. Kiss Me, We Are, B.E.A., Beautiful. Anything else you want to add, Travis?
That's everything. I think I might go with your idea for the, you know, my less than a dollar artifact deck and try it with the Kozilek.
Oh, yeah? Tweak it up a
little
bit.
The Heralds of Kozilek and Molten Nursery.
Yep. Herald of Kozilek, Molten Nursery, Ruination
yeah.
Guide, maybe. See if we can tweak it out
make
just
it
a little
aggro.
Bit. And, oh, no. If we get a... Well, not necessarily aggro, but make it where it can definitely go aggro. Like, to me, it feels like an aggro deck. It
right.
should probably be aggro. I don't know. If you have any thoughts, you're welcome to send us an email. Once again, that's twotrollsbrew@gmail.com. And you know, if you have any comments on any of the decks that we talked about today, or, again, Hearthstone versus Magic or Heroes versus League, let us know. We really do appreciate it. Of course, you can also check us out at Twitter. I'm Samus Grobel, all one word, SamusGurobo, just like the website and everything else. And, of course, you can give Travis a follow. Again, not that he tweets or does anything with it, but he's TurtlePower319. We'd also really appreciate it if you would jump over to twitch.tv/SamusGurobo, again, all one word, SamusGurobo, and give us a follow there. I play Monday through Friday every day, starting at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Tuesdays is our Magic Day right now, but Mondays we're playing Hearthstone. Wednesdays we're playing Dungeons & Dragons Online. Fridays we're currently playing League, although we might have to switch that up and play Heroes of the Storm, or perhaps Thursdays will become a Hero of the Storm, and Friday will become League. I don't know. It's still up in the air. Trying to twerk things out. Let me know what you want to do, and we will see about making that happen. Anything else other than promoting SamusGurobo.com just one more time?
Really, no matter how many colors you splash, mono green can still be five colors. Troll on.
I'm just gonna let that silence sit there for a second as I mentally wish you to die. Not die forever, just like die for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Did you die
yet?
Good
time. Yeah.
Was
I had
a good
party.
Time? Travis,
yeah.
Please don't die in a fire. I know that's what I was wishing for you right then.
I work in front of a fire oven every day.
Oh, so sweet, so sweet. The tastiest fire of all time. Roast Travis. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and troll
five
on.
Five-color mono green, troll on.
I hate you so bad.